Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saying.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Mobile Duck South Studios today. And I know Ramzilla is sitting. You may be sitting in a stable place this week, maybe not on in a truck sitting on top of the hill overlooking the prairie of Canada. But I've got Ramsey Russell with us.
What's up, Rocky?
How are you, man?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. I'm that kind of tired you get after you've been on the road for 15 days and been duck hunting every day. You know, you just kind of get in that groove. You get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, whether the alarm clock goes off or not. You feed the dogs. You fix a cup of coffee and relax. And then you go set up decoys and watch the sunrise and you start shooting stuff. So it's good.
The brown water is less at night, and the coffee stronger in the morning, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. That's a good way of putting it. My old dog today was funny. Cooper, we had a great shoot this morning. I'm with some friends. I'm with my buddy Ben Webster up here in Saskatchewan. He invited me to stay over for a couple of days. I joined him in a blind, and we had just a pile of ducks and geese. And stayed a little bit late, you know, trying to finish out them last couple stubborn birds. A couple of us still need a bird for the strap. And Cooper just, she was stretched out. She eased out of the blind, laid out in the sun, and was just soaking it up. We started calling. She didn't care. She didn't wag her tail. She was done, you know. And so she's tired, too. And but we had a great shoot. But I tell you what was crazy. And I got to tell you about the last 3 days. Okay, I went down and hung with Brennan Hudson at Alberta Waterfowl Outfitters. And I got to tell you, I'm going to tell you right now, first class in all respects. They have got, first off, you know, you pull up and they've got this magnificent, huge log cabin. I mean, just big log cabin. And it's overlooking just this ocean of prairie. I mean, it's as far as you can see. And right way on down below it, you can see where the a couple of rivers converge. And it just looks like, I don't know, looks like something you see in a cowboy and Indian movie or something. I mean, it's just your little house on the prairie, Wild West. He's got a couple of people, Pete and Debbie, that are kind of like his hospitality center, that run that cabin and cook. And, man, I'm going to tell you something. They cook unlike anything I may have ever had. It was unbelievable. One night they cooked a pork loin with some kind of wild berry sauce and some green beans with a bechamel sauce, they called it, some kind of salad. And I said to myself, you know what, if I get a last meal request, this is it. It was that good. And we shot some geese and ducks. It was awesome. It's so crazy. You know, we've talked about this in the past, Rocky, how it really works when you hunt with some old buddies or people you've hunted with a long time. Everybody knows everybody's timing. Well, I just show up at a camp. I don't know a soul. Now, a few people knew us, you know, but I didn't know the host. I didn't know the staff. I knew Brennan, but I didn't know his guides. I didn't know his scouts. I didn't know any of the people I joined. He holds back weeks, and this is important if you want to go to Canada. If you don't have 4 to 6 folks to roll with, you need to contact people like Brennan and also the guy in Saskatchewan I was working with. You need to contact people like that because they hold back a few weeks for spares and pairs. And that way, you know, you and your buddy can come and join 2 other people or 3 other people, and y'all make a group and go out and have a great time. So I didn't know a soul. And we put some of these A-frames together out there on the act. We crowd up in there, and it was awesome. I mean, it's like, for people I'd never met, birds just set up and would come in, boom, we just started raining. Everybody shot their zones. Everybody killed their birds. We all had a great time. And it just goes back to a lot of theme that I've said in the past, but also that practically every single person on your podcast has ever said. It's all about the people. And it just that was just a prime example of showing up and not knowing a living soul and hunting with these people for 3 days and leading with, you know, a Rolodex full of new names and numbers and all kinds of friends in social media and just good friends I know that I'll share blinds with again. But I got to tell y'all this, you know, I've been very fortunate to travel and see a lot of world and, you know, this is like, right about the time I think I've seen and done it all in a duck blind, you know, right about that time. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to hunt birds at 16,000 foot elevation in Andes Mountains. I've shot them 400 foot below sea level in Netherlands. I've shot them early in the morning, late at night on sea and ocean and land and pea fields and down rivers. And one of the craziest things, like James Bond hanging onto the side of a speedboat, shooting out of one hand, you know, running over waves on the Black Sea in Russia. I've shot them with spotlight, you know, in parts of the world. It's just right about the time I think I've seen and done it all yesterday. There's this young couple from Louisiana. I mean, young, 23, 22, really nice couple. And she wasn't one of these women that were just hunting with her boyfriend just because. I mean, she's a hunter. And that changes everything, man. She's a good hunter. And he's a good hunter. And she grew up hunting with her papaw. And then they met, he got her into duck hunting big, and she's just hook, line, and sinker. And I just made a comment kind of off the cuff to Brennan. I said, that boy needs to marry that girl. Because, I mean, they're two peas in a pod, you know, and, man, she loves to duck hunt like he does. And he goes, well, it's funny you say that, because he's going to propose to her tomorrow morning. I go, you're kidding. He goes, no, just he's going to propose to her in the blind. And that was the craziest thing, because part of the world that Brennan is in, there's a lot of outfitters up here shooting speckle bellies. I'm going to tell you, really and truly, 3 days in a row, eight or nine of us in a blind, and we just very, very quickly limited on specs. I mean, we're shooting bar bellies. And some days we got into the snows in Canada's too. But speckle belly central right there, you know, right off the bat. It got dark goose limit. In Canada, the dark goose limit is 8, five of which can be speckle bellies. Five specs. And that's just, it's fantastic. And I mean, look, Brennan and his staff, they're not Canadians. They're not, you know, even Brandon, Mississippians, they are from the Midwest, and them boys know how to call speckle belly and Canada geese and snows. I mean, it's really pretty impressive to listen to a real spec caller call. Because they don't do just the little two or three note call, man. These guys get down, start talking to specs, and it was just those birds just breaking down. And we hunted a real high hilltop yesterday, and almost immediately we were covered up with them birds. I mean, just little family cohorts, two or three, or big flocks, just boom boom coming rolling in. Maybe the left side of blind would shoot, maybe the right side, maybe we'd all shoot. And about the third or fourth volley, kind of played off the left end of the blind. I'm sitting down the right near an opening for Cooper. And five of them just locked up, you know, 20 yards high, and pulled up right over the left end of the blind. Boom, 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 boom. Everybody starts shooting. One of them just kind of falls back into the wind. You know, he's like, oh, crap, evacuate. And he just opened his wings, started retreating through the back, coming to my zone, bam, I folded. That's the one Cooper marked. The rest of them fell behind the blind and fell out front. Boom, off she goes, springs back, it's a band. Well, that's a nice start to a morning. Next volley that came in, and it's right in the thick of things, man. I mean, there's birds everywhere you look, there's freaking birds looking around for somewhere to come land. She, Allie, I hear her say down there, I got one that sunk down that way, and boom, off goes Brennan. I mean, there goes Brennan at a trot. And when he comes back up, he says, Allie, you need to come see this. I think you're going to appreciate this bird. And she goes, is it banded? Boy, she comes out of that blind quick. When she come around the backside, her boyfriend jumped up by the front. And she was zoned in on that speckle belly, Brennan holding it by its foot, you know. And when she walked up to it, he said, well, I'm gonna let Mason give you this. And he handed it off to Mason, and boy, Mason took a knee. And it was just, you know, just to see something like that, good Lord. You know? And so there were two bands killed yesterday, only hers a lot more special. But that was just, you know, just about time you think you've seen and done it all. you know. And so we had a great hunt, great 3 days up there in that part of Alberta with Brandon. Now it's just you got a real neat part of the world. You know, when you think from Mississippi or down south, you think of Canada. You think just kind of whatever you've seen a picture on TV of Canada, but it's not. You know, I've been, good gosh, Rocky. I started in Ontario and I went through parts of Manitoba and parts of Saskatchewan, then down to Alberta and then back up to Saskatchewan. And it's just incredible change, you know. Like right now we're hunting in a part of Canada they describe as the parkland. So it's a lot of agriculture, but in between the big agricultural fields are little coulees and drains and trees and forest clumps. And, you know, this morning going out, boom, old elk trotted across. Or last night, big old mule deer buck. You get down, way down south, you know, there's pronghorn and mule deer, big whitetails, and it's just the change everywhere you go. Even the crop patterns, like up here where we're hunting, it's just tons of pea fields. And these birds that are starting to migrate through, man, they're hitting these pea fields pretty hard. It's like some days they'll pile up into the wheat or barley, and you get that carbohydrate load, and then they want to find them a pea field, start really, really getting the protein and getting some energy into them before they start migrating south. But it's just interesting watching the whole thing unfold up here. You know, it was 92 degrees when I was in Ontario. Oh, that's a good question. I hadn't really looked at the whole map zoomed out big. I guess I'm in what they call north central Saskatchewan. You know, not really. We're not too far from the Alberta border, so we're kind of over in. I guess we're really north, and then kind of over to the west side. But it's man, it's incredible. We drove and scouted yesterday, and
close to north. I got Battleford.
Here. We're a good ways from it. Yeah, we're a good ways from it. You know, the secret, like I'll say, and I ain't gonna pinpoint nothing on the map for the sake of anybody I work with up here. You can't. Because, right. You know, those Yankee boys with the big white trailers, they ain't about 6 to 10 hours away and they'll jump and come on, you know. And the secret to me of working or hunting with the right outfitter in Canada is finding an outfitter that was resourceful and spent a lot of time researching and putting it together, and he found somewhere that he doesn't have that there's no hotels or amenities within an hour or two. That's the secret. And it's a big country up here. But, you know, when you get around places like North Battleford, every restaurant and every hotel you drive by is another outfitter's turf. I mean, literally, it's about noon right now. You drive down through North Battleford, every restaurant you look at is going to have a white trailer with a different logo on it. Every hotel you drive by is going to have, boom, another outfitter. It's his turf. And that's just, it's crazy. And so, you know, sometimes when you get around some real, real heavy areas, what happens is, Rocky, several outfitters will find the same feed and it becomes kind of a competition. You know, and that's just, you know, so what you got to do is all these boys up here we work with, they've just been fortunate enough to either lock up through good relationships of some good land, or just find an area that's still unbelievably where nobody found yet.
Well, I was talking to, I guess, four or five different outfitters for working with our migration report back a few months ago, and that got narrowed down to about three people, because three of those outfitters, you know, they were like, I'm not giving away any information for Canada, because Canada is so different. You know, your ability or your access to land up there.
Well, you know, it's really a pretty noble way the Canadian government treats wildlife. And as far as that goes, right now, hunting. Now, you get to talk to some of these guys local at, you know, 18, 19 years old that have waited for 2 years to get a gun permit, just saying, I own a shotgun. You know, you realize how blessed we are at times in America. But, you know, in Saskatchewan, Alberta, for example, it is unlawful for a landowner to take money for access to go shoot his birds. It's unlawful. So you can't jump in and pay him and lock it up like you could a lease down in Mississippi. You can't do that because they look at it has been explained to me several times in many provinces by a lot of different people. They look at it like, you know, it's a public resource. Waterfowl belong to everybody. And it's just not right that because of crop patterns on your farm that you benefit from it, number one. Number two, they know, or they believe they know, and we know, I guarantee you we know, that if it ever goes to that system, then you're going to have some 15 or 16 year old kid out here in the middle of nowhere that wants to go shoot geese, and he ain't going to be able to go because he ain't got money to get onto a lease. You know, and so right now, I mean, Rocky, it's just so amazing to me. I mean, I've been too long. I don't know how many thousands of miles I've driven in the last little bit, but it's just amazing going through these little towns. When you get to Saskatoon, it's just a big old dirty town. You know, it's like every other big city. Just but when you got here in the country, it's just these little communities, like Mayberry. I mean, I'm serious, like Mayberry or something out here. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody looks after everybody. You know, and it's just a real sense of community and pride in that community. And it's just kind of open, you know, you knock on doors. But sometimes, you know, a lot of these outfitters are very good at building a network. And just because you can't accept money to let people come and hunt it doesn't mean you can't tell somebody no. So you can tell somebody no. And if somebody comes on your property that doesn't have your permission, you can call law enforcement and they're trespassing. You know, so you can, without exchanging money, you can build relationships to where people will not let other outfitters come and shoot those birds, you know, on a first come, first serve. And that's kind of a good thing if you're a guy like Brennan or Matt Shower or Chris Wujek, you know, that's a very good thing that you've got those relationships. And you know what's crazy? These birds are dry feeding. I mean, you don't, like in the afternoons, you might go out and shoot a tiny pothole. But the last thing anybody in this business up here is going to do is shoot a roost. Ever, never, never is anybody going to go shoot a roost. It, not everybody. Don't everybody listening that freelance hunts think I'm against freelance because I'm not. But it's really a lot of outfitters I've known and have worked with up here in Canada. If they are going to try to lock up or protect a property, it's usually not going to be a feed because. You know, man, the geese will just jump all over these fields, you know. It'll get into a field for a few days and then go to another one. It's just millions of square miles of agricultural fields up here. But what they want to protect are the roosts. Because time and time again, you hear these stories about, you know, the guys that drive up here and hunt for the freelance week of the year, you know, or two, get down the last day and just to make a pile and look cool on the internet, they'll go burn out a roost. Man, once you shoot that roost, it's over. For the year, forever. Once you go shoot an area that the birds are resting on, you know, they're overnighting and they'll get up and go sit back on it midday. Once you burn it out, once you shoot near it, once you blow them out, they ain't coming back. You know, and usually you're just trying to kill the whole area.
And usually a
pretty sizable body of water.
Body of water, correct. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Chris Wujek pointed this out to me one time, and I never really gave any thought. And I don't know that I've pieced it together, how it, say if I'm hunting willowbrake, how it would fall together, but how the birds a lot of times will roost in a big slough, especially the ducks. That's what he was pointing out, was like to be a big slough, and those ducks roost, and the first thing they do when they come off the roost is go find one of these tiny little water bodies and drink, and then they fly off and feed, and then they go back and hit and drink water somewhere, and then they go back and lay up somewhere. So it's kind of, you know, it's those roosts where them that are holding those birds. Like every major water body I saw, I drove about 4.5 hours yesterday. Every major water body I saw yesterday is covered with birds. A lot of snow geese, a lot of specks, a lot of Canadas. And what's crazy, I've been up here now. We've shot a bunch of light geese, a bunch of Ross, speckled bellies, Canadas, big and little, and it's crazy how few juvenile birds there are this year. I mean, I'll say if we've shot 100 white geese, two or three of them have been juvies. Ditto for the specks. I recall seeing one juvenile speckled belly, and all the bird we've shot and all the limits, you know, have been brought down. I've seen one juvenile, so it must have been at least the birds that are here right now are coming through. It must have been a pretty poor hatch for those geese this year. And it's maybe it's making them more difficult to hunt. I don't know. you know. But it's
what do you see in duck wise? Are the ducks moving
around? Lot of mounters, yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of mounters and pintails, and it's hard for me to say, and I don't know that they know yet. I kind of think that because the weather's been so mild, I'd say lows in the 40s, highs in the 50s, 60s. It seems it's probably local hatch birds. Maybe the birds from further north hadn't come down yet. But I know that Friday, Saturday, it's supposed to drop down. This morning it was 33 degrees when we got to the field. And, of course, it's 55, 60 degrees outside now. But I know Friday, Saturday, they're supposed to get a little, you know, 30, 40% chance of frozen precipitation. And it's going to be interesting. Everybody's saying, everybody I've met through this stretch right now saying it seems early. It seems like some bird, the geese, it seems a little early for them, for some of the geese they're seeing, some of the numbers, some of the patterns they're seeing. But like Peace River, which is like the first little major ag corridor, at least in Alberta, that the birds pass through. It's kind of, if the birds come through the Arctic, you know, they can come through Peace Valley, Peace River country, and then they kind of span out, you know, through other parts of Saskatchewan and Alberta. And man, it's so wet up there. I heard of at least one outfitter that has started calling his October bookings and giving them a heads up that there's a good chance they're going to be canceled. That he's probably going to cancel their hunt because there's not enough fields cut, and a lot of the geese and birds are either overflying them or have left. You know, and what fields have been cut just aren't, you know, are getting pounded. It's just like a drought year in Mississippi. You know, if there was water last year in Mississippi, somebody was standing in it shooting at ducks. I'm kind of hearing the same thing up in that part of the world right now. So, you know, it seemed to be going together. I think the duck numbers look normal to me, especially yesterday. Every single pothole I drove by had ducks on it. Now, he said, now here's the interesting. It's like, you know, the big bodies, the bigger bodies of water, You see your mallards, pintails, geese, things of that nature, and you get these little bitty potholes, just these little bitty acre, quarter acre, small, tiny, mucky cattail little potholes, and that's where you have tons of gadwall. Hey, we're going to do good on gadwall this year, because there's tons of them. I didn't see nothing hardly but gadwalls yesterday. It was little bitty afternoon potholes, you know, they're just covered with gadwalls. And saw quite a few green wings. I did not see any blue wings yesterday. Saw some redheads. But yeah, I think it's looking pretty good. The parts of Canada I've been to last week or two have been fairly wet. Have been wetter than I thought they'd be. You know, it's looking pretty decent.
Ramsey, I know a lot of time. Let's talk about this for a minute in terms of Canada hunting. A lot of time in the afternoon just spent scouting. How do those outfitters determine where they're going to set up the next morning as it pertains to scouting that afternoon before?
Man, that's a good question. I'll tell you what. You know, you would think if you've never been here, you would think that you come to Canada, just the headwaters of migration, just everywhere you look, left, right, up and down, there's geese and ducks. It ain't, man. It's like needles in a haystack. When you find them, there's a bunch of them all over, everywhere. And then you get drive periods of time, you don't see a duck or two, you know, and it's crazy like that. And, man, they get out and they beat the bushes and they look for real active, busy feeds. That's the name of the game, is catching a feed. And it's like you can't just drive by and see a bunch of birds. It's, oh, that's where I'm going. You can't do that. You've got to sit on them. You see what I'm saying? It's like we went and looked at a field yesterday afternoon. They'd been watching for a couple of days and thought the birds were going to come back in there yesterday evening. They didn't. Not a duck. He said, man, there were probably 10,000 ducks and geese in here. Been here for a couple of days. So they thought it was a slam dunk. And we drove out in the field and, man, Rocky, it looked like somebody had a picking shed out there. There's so many feathers and stuff out there in that field. And somebody sat on it last night just to see what came in, and nothing came in, not a duck, not a goose. And they drove by this morning. There they are, about 10,000 ducks and geese sitting in that feed. So what I understand they're looking for is just to find an area that the birds have been on. I think it's like if you've seen some birds on it for a few days, all of a sudden it starts to build, and that's when you want to hit it. And it helps if it's a location that's got some strategic advantage, some lee side or some flat spots or some visibility, you know, where birds run, you know, trafficking around can see it too. That, you know, and then it's just good old educated guess. You know, don't think these outfitters, a good outfitter sweats it. Don't think they don't. Don't think just because they're calm, cool, you know, with the blind that they ain't sweating. Because they do, because, you know, we're hunting migratory birds. And, but yeah, you know, they really, it's unbelievable how much fuel these guys burn and how many miles they put on their vehicles. It's just unbelievable because that's all they do is drive. You know, they're scouting kind of sort of when they're driving to and from the fields, and they've got scouts running always, you know, always while clients are in the blind, the rest of the staff is out, you know, watching a roost and following those birds, you know, seeing where they're going. And then are sitting in the evening on a flock of birds and picking up and following them to see where they're roosting. It's just trying to put together these patterns and figure out which feed is going to produce. You know, like this morning, some of us went to a pea field and shot. We had one big bunch of Canada's come over, and we capitalized on it a little bit. And we shot a bunch of dark geese, a bunch of Canada's, cacklers and big Canada's. And we had a great duck shoot. There was one of those little drinking ponds, I'd call it, because you saw it, I don't know, about 5-10 minutes, first 20 minutes of shooting light. A lot of birds were coming out of the east and weren't even paying attention to the decoys. They were hitting this lake down below us. And after they got and drank, then they came up the hill and paid us a visit, paid rent at that matter. But, and then the geese came on. And then the other bunch, we had driven scouting last night, and there'd been a field he wanted to check on, and it was probably a section of snow geese. Quite a few little cacklers mixed in with them, but a bunch of snows, and those guys went out and just had a great time shooting snows this morning.
Ramsey, is at any point up there that you do, that you're not sitting in a dry field, that you're hunting over water?
Yeah, sometimes. You know, Chris Wujcik over in Manitoba, he actually does some diver hunts. He's got some big bodies of water to hold a lot of divers. And he's got clients that are into that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, they're into it. And sometimes you'll go out and hunt near or on a small body of water. That can be pretty effective in the afternoons, especially, is to go shoot little potholes where the birds will come to drink on their way to feed in the afternoons or on the way back. That works good. You know, here in Canada, you can shoot 30 minutes after sunset, not 30 minutes before, 30 minutes after sunset. And that makes a difference. That makes a huge difference.
Well, you have, what, one more week in Canada?
I don't know, Rocky. I'm starting to lose count, man. I'll be honest with you. I leave here in a few days. What day? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Probably leave here Friday. Head over to Manitoba. Their opener for non-residents is on the 24th. And I'm going to join some friends and clients over there with Chris Wujcik. We're going to get after it 4 or 5 days. I'm going to stop by in North Dakota on the way home and pick up. I've never duck hunted in North Dakota. I'm gonna pick up a few days there, and then I'm ready to come home. And I'll tell you something. Let me change the subject. I may recall I picked up a puppy on the way up here. She's growing leaps and bounds, and she's probably 10 or 11 weeks old now.
I forgot how much
work a puppy was.
I forgot how much work a puppy was. We have worked too much together lately, because I swear you're reading my mind today. Everything that I'm just about to ask you about, you go right into it.
Boy, I completely forgot. My wife told me yesterday, she goes, I'm glad you're taking care of it, not me. And golly, she is such a little fireball personality. I love her to death. But boy, these puppies are a lot of, you know, they got to be fed 3 times. You got to let them out all the time and run them and air them. And she's smart. She's doing a little sit. She's already, it took just one walk around a block on a leash, and she's got that together. And, but it's a, you know, whereas I might just roll out 20 minutes before we leave, you know, if it was just me by myself or something like that, but having that dog, you know, I got to get up now, because she's got to be aired out and taken care of and fed again and everything else, which is fine. But, you know, it's really, on the flip side of it is, it's spending a lot of midday time and morning and afternoons with her, and her getting to crawl all over all these birds and just get a, you know, that's the thing about a puppy. They just need to see and experience everything. So we're having a good little break-in period together, you know.
Is that the wintering ground? You were talking about divers earlier. Should I ask you this before we left that topic? But
wintering grounds are down south. My understanding, a lot of diver species breed further north, like up in the boreal. But on some of the big deep water bodies and stuff like that, those birds will breed up here. You know, it may be just they're localized around big bodies of water. But Chris just because of the part of the world he's in, where he's set up, he just got some good big lakes around there that hold that a lot of the divers, the canvasbacks and redhead and stalks will stage. And I don't know where they're coming from. They could be coming from here. You know, it's not like the birds just fly only through Saskatchewan or only through Alberta or only through Manitoba. You know, a lot of the goose migration kind of starts bending around over in the northeast quadrant of Saskatchewan. It's got this mountain formation gets into Manitoba called the Riding Mountains. And those birds are kind of, like a lot of these birds we're seeing up here, these light geese, they will kind of drift southeast and hook right around those mountains and on their way to Devil's Lake, which is way southeast of here. You know, that's kind of how they flow through there. And then some of them may just kind of flow more southerly towards Texas. But that's, you know, a lot of our birds coming right through Chris and Devil's Lake. Devil's Lake is North Dakota is a big staging area coming and going for snow geese. It's a major, major staging area. Where those birds stop over, coming and going. It's just a big holdover. And so that he catches a lot of that traffic too.
And I totally screwed that up. But I have to tell you though, Ramsey, I've got that fall.
I knew what you were saying.
Cold. I'm totally backwards today.
Well, I'm just in a fog from being on the road and getting up at 3 and not paying attention. I couldn't even tell you hardly what day it is. I'd have to look at my phone to tell you what date it is. But you know, it's just and that's a good way to be. I like it when you forget what day it is. You know, that's a good way to be. And I just know that tomorrow I'm getting up and going duck hunting.
I got some good news for you before I let you go.
Yes, sir.
Today, I met and ate lunch with Tyler Steen of Backland Game Calls, and guess what I just picked up?
What?
The Double R2.
The Double R2. Golly. I can't wait to hear it, man.
It is the first official, you know, it's a kind of a Duck South branded duck call from Backland Game Calls. Tyler works with our migration reports in Northwest Tennessee and North Mississippi. But anyway, he made up a group of collectors calls. He totally 100% custom calls. And I asked him, you know, if we could utilize, he's making two calls and then Adam Lyerly over at Refuge is going to make some. And I asked those guys, hey, do you mind if we memorialize these calls? Because I think it's for the people that contributed the most to MS Ducks, and which turned into Duck South later on, commemorate those people. And, man, they love the idea. And anyway, I picked up the Gulf Coast edition today and the Double R2.
I'll be dang. Well, I appreciate you, Rocky. You know, and I tell you, it means a lot to me that it's 100% custom made. I like that idea. Yes, that had become a lost art. You may see in social media. I don't know what triggered it. But here lately, I've been passed through an area. Yeah, I want to see these guys. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, if you look at these catalogs today, maybe the original prototype from which the die was cut, you know, was handmade. But now so many of these CNC machines, and as long as they sound good and they do good and you like them, we'll kind of knock yourself out. But, boy, it just means a lot to me that there's no two calls. Those things are turned by hand. There's no two calls exactly alike.
And, you know, it's
you
great.
Know, and I just, it means a lot to me.
That you say that, Ramsey. He had opened the box and he said, what do you like? What do you prefer blowing? I said, I like blowing double reed. I'm not a single reed guy. I've just ever since I started blowing, I just think a double reed sounds more ducky. Now you can get, of course you can get down on a single reed and, you know, when you're working traffic, you can pull one out of the sky. But to me, I'm get them in close, and I can get them in there with the double reed. I can make a double reed sound just like old Mallard Hen. But anyway, that's the thing that he pointed out, Ramsey, when he pulled those calls out. He said, I hope you don't mind. He said, but every one of these calls now just a little different. They're 100% custom made. You can see that they got the belly's just a little different on them. I said, man, that's what's so great about custom calls.
Mm-hmm. You know, some of the first calls I got into, and today maybe it's just sentimental. Just sentimentally, I still like old Alvin Taylor's call, Taylor Made. Gaston's call sounds just like him. I'm gonna tell you, I went and saw David not too long ago for us, and I drove down there to see him, and he makes a great call too. Turned a lot of them by hand. But when I was back in college, I'd drive over to Clarendon, Arkansas when I didn't have nothing else to do and spend some time with that old Tankers guy, old Alvin Taylor. Watch him make a few calls and do stuff like that. But when you wanted one of his calls, you had to blow a bunch of them because they all sounded different. And they were all handmade. And some of my buddies back in at state, you know, they said, well, I'm going to call them up and order them. I said, man, you better go blow it. Why? I said, well, you better go blow it before you buy one. Because, you know, if he didn't know you, maybe he'd give you that call that 50 people had blown didn't want. You know what I'm saying? And they right. got rid of it. And so, you know, it's just kind of personal to do that. And I do like a single read. I ain't gonna lie to you. I like a single read. And, you know, Josh Raggio, I went to his shop. I don't know how we got to talking, but I went out to Raymond to his shop a couple weeks ago. And, man, let me tell you this. I've had a woodworking shop before, but let me tell you what, it looked like a woodworking shop. It was dusty and moldy and spider webs, and, you know, that's just how I process. I go, man, walking into Josh's shop is like walking into an art studio. I looked for a fleck of dust and couldn't find it. But, man, he when you get a call from him, you just pick the wood. He got those little blocks of wood, and you pick one you like. And sit there and BS with him for about an hour and a half, and he turns it. I mean, right there before your eyes. And you want this ring or that ring? Do you want this or that? How do you want this thing done? Then you sit at the bench with him and start trimming, and you've got millions of reeds. So if you cut one too short, start again, and just you will and trim and narrow and until it's just what you want. Man, that's just such an experience. But, you know, he kind of showed me, and much as I've blown a duck call, I learned something when he showed me how to trim the edges, the taper at the end of the reed to give it that buzz you want. You know, wider is one way, narrower is a little more buzz, and you can play with it like that. So I guarantee you, a guy like Josh or a guy like Tyler, they could take a single reed and trim that single reed to get the sound you're looking for. You know,
well,
and it's just,
I'm actually
I guarantee
lucky
you they
enough.
Could.
I'm going to spend the day with Josh Raggio next Wednesday. I'm going to
mm-hmm.
Josh Raggio is donating a traveling duck call to go that's going to travel around the Duck Tough group, and I'm going to go down there and film the process. I'm going to spend the afternoon
mm-hmm.
with him while we make that call. It should be an interesting process that, you know, I'll be able to take pictures of and put video on the Duck South group.
No, it's really nice the way he does that. It really, really is. And he's a very interesting guy anyway. But, you know, he's got a little curio room up front with a lot of heritage, a lot of collectible type stuff. It's very, very interesting. I'd go back just sit around and shop and bullshit with him. You know, it's just very interesting and to watch that process do it. But you're going to enjoy that. But I guarantee you, you ask Josh, I guarantee he'd show you how to make a single reed sound just like a double. And I think he makes them both too, but I'm a single reed guy. And
Double
R2 is a single reed, Rocky. Or I'm going to have to go by and see Tyler and get him to make me one.
Nope, it is a double reed, of course, with the double R.
Well, double reed too. All right, Tyler, I'll come see you and get one custom done for single reed. But anyway, Rocky, I appreciate the thought, man. I really do. Man, I'm humbled by that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of guys have told me, said, look, some of the older guys that's on that grew up on the site or grew up around the site or were part of the site, they want them just to put on their shelf because each year we're going to put out four or five of these calls, and we're going to commemorate, like I said, the greatest, the people that contributed the most to to this site. I mean, there's an endless number of people that made MS Ducks the powerhouse that it was. So it's a very, very exciting deal. I feel that it's owed to those guys.
It was a community. Like it was a community. When it started, MS Ducks was a community like none other that I've ever seen. I mean, it really was a very, very, hundreds of people, but a very, very personal community because over time, I bet I know 90% of everybody that ever posted on that forum now. No one personal. Handshake, recognize them, you know, in crowd, know them. And that was so fascinating. And I really like the way the Facebook is going. You know, it's a lot wider audience, but it does have a lot of familiarity to it. And I appreciate and hear a lot of people. You know, Rocky, I just remind you, you know, we've been doing these podcasts. And I didn't know what a podcast was a year and a half ago. Well, let me tell you what, driving, like we've been driving since September 4th or 5th, you know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. And it's pretty entertaining. Like, you know, I tell you, while driving somewhere, I was only going to drive about 6 or 7 hours. I hit my daily average, and I catch up the next day anyway. Ended up driving to about 1 in the morning. I was supposed to quit around 8, but I ended up driving till 1 just listening to podcasts, you know, and first hotel I stopped at was sold out, so I had to drive another hour. But that worked out good. And between that, what great days we're living in, you know, with these iPhones. I mean, kids, man, a lot of these younger guys that may or may not be listed, but that are participating on your site, they couldn't imagine. They probably know what a cassette is. You know, back in those days, you just listen to the same old songs while you're driving or golly, having to push the buttons till you found a radio station in between. And up this part of the world, you might be a long time without radio stations picking up. But now to have your download on your music, man, I can drive for a year, never hear the same, and it's all the songs I like. You know, and we were riding in a truck the other day with some new friends, and my phone picked up on their system and started playing. They all liked the music, but it was crazy how it'd go from Tom T. Hall to Iron Maiden to somebody else. You know, just jump around. They're like, good gosh, you guys, you know, it's a cloud. I said, well, I like them all, don't you? And, you know, I got to tell them this story. We were talking about the crazy music. And I just had this thought the other day as we were talking about music and what I was listening to all over the dial, you know. You go to a lot of these foreign countries, Rocky. Canada ain't really a foreign country. They just talk funny up here and eat different. But, you know, you get Russia, Argentina, and Europe, and all these different countries. And the best piece of advice I've ever given anybody to clients that are going into cultures where there's no speaking the language, I tell them put two things on their phone, music and pictures. Because with those two things right there, you can, you know, speak to a Russian that doesn't speak any English but wants to communicate, to an Azerbaijani, to a Romanian, you know, that speaks absolutely no English. But all of a sudden, you start showing them pictures of your home or how you hunt or birds you hunt. And even though y'all don't speak a common language, a bond, you know what I'm saying? You just connect. Over there. And then he pulled out his phone. You start seeing his family and his home and different things like that. You're communicating just without words, with pictures. And I've seen the same thing using music. And there's four bands I have found almost universally that I can connect with people. Probably, and I can tell you this, it ain't Jason Aldean. Ain't nobody listening to him, but frankly, Gene Suburbanites. You know, what do you think those four bands would be? If I told you I'm in Russia or Argentina or Romania or Azerbaijan, I told you there were four bands I could turn on and immediately everybody would know who they are. It'd surprise you. Got any guesses? It ain't Jason Aldean.
Bands or just in general singers?
Band. You know, I tell you, the four bands that I got on my phone that I would say nearly everybody will recognize one or all of them that I've been in the world. Now, not counting the Mideast. That's a little far-flung, but everywhere else. AC/DC, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, and a band, Iron Maiden. You turn on one of them four bands, and I'd say everybody on everywhere I've been in the world recognizes and relates to some, if not all of them. That's crazy, isn't it?
Wow. I was going to say Guns N' Roses. in ACDC.
Oh, Guns N' Roses, hands down. Guns N' Roses, ACDC. But I didn't think many people listen to Iron Maiden. I'm, you know, like I did when I was in ninth grade, but everybody does. All these folk, Russia. I listened to a podcast the other day with the lead singer of Metallica. They played, the largest audience they ever played to was over 500,000 people at one time in Russia. And it freaked, wow, it freaked the Russian government out. You know, but man, wow, you go to that part of the world, and I ain't just crazy about Metallica, not all of Metallica all the time, but man, you turn it on and boom, you just connect with somebody because they get it. They listen to it. So anyway, I thought that would be interesting to talk about.
All right, Ramsey, well, in your travels, be careful. Enjoyed it again this week. We will talk again next week. May have to talk a little earlier, one day earlier next week, if that's okay. But we'll talk about that later, sure, on after this. I enjoyed it. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
Ladies and gentlemen!